Hi there. Do you know what your anxiety profile is? Me, I was a besieged panicker. We often say that the first step to reversing anxiety is to understand it. And that's why we've created a tool to help you discover your anxiety profile. And it's totally free. In about 90 seconds, you'll receive your customized anxiety profile. And it will answer so many questions you've probably been struggling with, including, am I going crazy? And why me? So if you haven't yet, pause this episode and head to lifefreeofanxiety.com/profile or click the link in the show notes. I promise you'll get a lot more out of this and every episode once you know your anxiety profile. And now, on to the show.
All right, Life Free of Anxiety podcast. I just got off the phone with Carl Goldman, who had the coronavirus. You may have heard his story in People magazine. He's been featured a lot on Fox News. He's been on 60 Minutes. His story was actually a pretty big deal. The way I followed his story was actually locally because he owns KHTS, which is the local Santa Clarita radio station up here. And he's been documenting his story day by day, starting from the cruise ship where he first got the coronavirus. There was an outbreak on the ship. And then the isolation he went into in Nebraska, he continued to write. So I followed his story there, but you may have seen his story somewhere else. You're going to listen to him talk to me today about his experience. Some of it is a little scary. I want to remind you, it's not your typical story, so it's not going to most likely ever happen to you. I want you to keep that in mind. But he does talk about, you know, just staying positive and staying grateful and how he got through it, because he did get through it. He's back home right now. He is negative for the coronavirus. His wife never got it. So listen to this conversation. Stay calm. No need to panic about it. It's kind of sheds the light on the reality of the coronavirus. He is over 65. He has an underlying condition and he's okay. So I just want you to take those positives away before you hear some of the details that might sound a little scary in his story. But most of all, I think it's extremely inspiring, and I hope that it causes all of us around this time not to worry, to stay calm, and to just kind of do our part and stay home. All right, let's listen. Welcome to the Life Free of Anxiety podcast, where each week we'll bring you another discussion to help you on your way to overcoming your fears. I'm Erica, and together with Dr. Charles Barr, a licensed clinical psychologist specializing in anxiety, we'll be your guides on this journey. Because you are not broken, you are not alone, and you are on your way to living a life free of anxiety. He made worldwide headlines when he tested positive for the coronavirus aboard a Diamond Princess cruise ship back in February. You may have seen him on 60 Minutes, People Magazine, Fox News, CNN, The Today Show, the list goes on. Or if you're like me, you followed his well-documented journey on his blog on the KHTS website. KHTS is a local Santa Clarita, California radio station that Carl co-owns with his wife, Jerry. And Carl and I are both longtime Santa Clarita residents. So thank you so much for being here, Carl.
I am so happy to be here. And even though we're remotely together.
Yeah, we're close by, but not that close. How are you feeling now that you no longer have the virus, first of all?
I'm feeling fine from the coronavirus standpoint. I had a precondition. I'm 67 years old and I had a GBS, Guillain-Barré syndrome, that impacts the immune system and the nervous system. Mm-hmm. So I'm numb on my feet and over my hands. That is still bad. And they couldn't attend to it during the whole time I went through the corona ordeal, because they both impact the immune system and they didn't want to throw too many things at my body, which was a smart decision.
So it kind of flared up worse during the virus because you weren't able to get the treatment you needed.
Yeah. Well,
you were very isolated for some time. How long were you isolated for? It started with the cruise ship.
I'm working on the Guinness World Record for quarantine for corona now
my
57th day.
Wow.
I've done four different quarantines. This is the easiest one.
Yeah,
and this
at
one's
home.
Voluntary. I'm home. I have the dogs. I'm outside. I kid around because I get to clean up the dog poop. and so I have a lot more freedom. When I was on the Diamond Princess, we had a 14-day quarantine, and that was with my wife and our two friends, Mark and Jerry Jorgensen, traveled with us. Right at the start of the trip, we had shared a balcony because our suites, mini suites, were next door to each other. So we had opened the door of the balcony. So it was cool because we could go back and forth and spend time with each other.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Watch movies together, eat. And I think that's what saved my 29-year marriage. Because
right.
even though we had Valentine's Day together in the cabin, but 12 days with a spouse with only, you know, about a 20-foot long and 8-foot wide room is a very big challenge.
It wasn't a romantic then, Valentine's Day, is what you're saying.
No.
Okay.
Then we traveled back to the States, and when we got to the States, I was put in a special biocontainment unit in Nebraska in Omaha, and that was the first time it was used for the virus. They had set it up originally right after 9/11 when there was an anthrax scare.
Mm-hmm.
Never got to use it for anthrax. They set one up in Omaha, one in Atlanta, one in New York, and never used it. 15 years went by, and they used it for the first time for the Ebola outbreak.
Wow.
And put it to the test there. And then I was the start of wave number two, going into that biocontainment unit, which was like a scene out of the Andromeda strain or out of the movie Contagion. The windows are totally sealed with double pane glass and chicken wire in between it. The door is specially sealed. No one entered that room without a full hazmat suit on, looking like Neil Armstrong when he landed on the moon, because they have that motor going so the air can circulate inside the suit.
Oh,
three
goodness.
Layers of gloves. Yeah. So they were coming in, nurses were coming in once every 4 hours around the clock, and the doctor would come in once a day and see me in the hazmat suit, and then also check in on me a couple times later on in the day through a two-way camera. I had two cameras on me at all times, and
wow.
could look back at the central control. So a lot of my communication was done virtually. So I spent my 67th birthday alone there, celebrated that February 22nd, spent 10 days alone in the biocontainment unit, and then I was stable enough for them to move me over to a lower level of about three blocks away, where a number of other passengers from the Diamond Princess were recovering, and also where my wife was staying. What's weird is my wife never got the virus.
Yeah.
And there were two other friends got it.
The other couple got it that you were with?
Yeah.
They both got it.
The other couple got it. In fact, Jerry Jorgensen was the first to get it. She came down with it the day after Valentine's Day. And that was the worst moment for us, because by then there were about 300 passengers and crew who had been taken off the ship. We were docked in an isolated dock in Yokohama. And the dock itself was very intimidating, because looking down, we could see a number of people in hazmat suits. Ambulances were standing by, at times as many as 80 would be there. Military trucks had set up a V in a long tube so they could take a passenger off the ship, pull the ambulance up, and take the passenger out. The other side was packed with news media, cameras, satellites, helicopters were flying around the ship at all times during daylight, with the news media, taking any kind of visual shots they could get, and then news media on boats circling the ship as well. So it was a circus. There, at that time, we in the end had about 750 of us who got the virus. At the time, there were only 300, and unfortunately, later on, 11 have died from the Diamond Princess. But
oh, wow.
But back then, the 300 who had it were represented double the rest of the entire world population with the virus, with the exception of China. So this was still very, very early on, and which is why we were getting so much media attention.
That's what I was going to ask you, was that because nowadays, and this is very shortly later nowadays, but nowadays, if you get, you know, they don't even want you to come into the doctor anymore. They say stay home and get better there unless something gets really severe. So at this point, I mean, there's just these crazy measures being taken and this, you know, a media circus, as you put it. Do you think it's changed a lot since you first got it to now of how severe this is being? I mean, obviously, it's still severe. We're still on lockdown. But I mean, do you think it needed to be that severe for you with all these precautions taken to get off the ship? And
yeah, because you have to put it, it's easy to look back now and say, wow, there were giant mistakes made and the Diamond Princess was a floating Petri dish. But you have to look at it in real time with the Japanese health officials and the Princess Cruise officials. They were working in an information vacuum. China had not released very much information yet on the virus. They were just beginning to understand how it was spreading. And they also didn't know the percentages of how many, you know, severe cases there would be versus not severe, why it's traveling and with some people into their chests and not others. Why does someone like my wife, who's totally exposed to all of us, go the whole time without getting it? None of those. They were working from a void at that time. And what we learned as time went on while we were still on the ship was that they then started revealing, oh, the virus can travel. It can actually attach to surfaces and stay on those surfaces for 1, 2, 3, 4 hours, possibly. So the way this virus started was a passenger got off the ship at Hong Kong and had come down with the virus 4 days later. And so the ship bolted back to Yokohama and put us all in quarantine, but they didn't put us in quarantine till a day and a half later. We still had use of the ship. So no one realized back then that that ground zero patient could have touched a railing. I could have walked by an hour later and touched that railing. Now I'm infected. I definitely was infected for 2 or 3 days before realizing it, before having any symptoms. So, you know, going back in real time, you can't fault the decisions they made. You can look back and say, boy, had they done X instead of Y, they should have taken us off the ship right away.
Right.
That would have been the solution. But they didn't know.
Yeah.
They didn't understand.
It's not like we could see this coming, right? It's not like anyone saw this coming exactly.
Well, I think a lot of this, you have to go back, and China's definitely to blame for a lot of this, because had China released their information earlier, then we would not have been kept on the ship. And also, I think our country and everyone else could have reacted a lot quicker, sealing off the virus so that we wouldn't find it. We would have had more lead time.
Right.
And now we're still playing catch up.
So by the time you tested positive, were you thinking, I've seen this on the news about China, I know people are very sick. Were you scared at that point?
Yeah, but I was more scared when Jerry Jorgensen got the virus. So when on Valentine's Day, I mean, the day after Valentine's Day, Jerry and her husband, Mark, is a double kidney survivor.
Wow.
So they went ahead and tested both of them with the swabs.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the passengers, including us, they just went around, took our fever, and then gave us digital thermometers. We had to take our temperature 3 times a day
and then
notify them if we got fever. That was the sign of getting the virus. So for me, what happened is we were loaded on the buses. We were stuck on the buses for 6.5 hours waiting to board 2 747 cargo planes in Tokyo. And there were no bathrooms on the bus. That was the worst experience. No bathrooms. People were freaked. People were claustrophobic. It was a bad situation. We then got onto the plane. It was a cargo plane. There were only two bathrooms on there, but thank goodness there were bathrooms.
Yeah.
But you had, you know, a line of 50 people at a time to go there. There were no stewardesses. There were three Air Force personnel, all in hazmat suits. One was an Air Force doctor, and the other two were part of his team. And we took off. When we started flying, I fell asleep because it was already early the next morning. We'd been up all night.
And you had a fever at this point, right? I think I read that you had a fever at this point.
Not when I fell asleep.
Oh, okay.
When I fell asleep, I didn't have a fever. I woke up 2 hours later with the fever.
Okay.
And what's weird about my symptoms, and to backtrack a second, Jerry Jorgensen, by the time she got to the hospital, her fever had already broken. They took all the tests on her, and she was fine.
So oh, wow.
She just had a convalesce there in the hospital for a good 14 days. She was there, I think, 16 days total of convalescing before they would release her after she tested negative a couple times for it.
Is she okay now, back home now? Or?
Oh, yeah. She's fine now.
Oh, good.
Totally fine.
Good.
Her husband, Mark, was on the plane with us, and because we realized that there was absolutely no value in him staying in Japan. He had to be separated anyway, and he was going to be better off coming back with us to the States, and knowing he could get back in on the States.
Right.
I woke up. We had our digital thermometers. I took my temperature, and it was over 103.
And then you must have just known, right?
Oh, like, yeah.
I know what this
I
is.
Knew that
yeah.
For sure.
Uh-huh.
For sure. I knew I had it. This is it. But I already had Jerry Jorgensen, and by then we knew all the other passengers. No one had died yet with the Diamond Princess. So we knew that the odds of recovery were going to be really, really good.
Right.
So I was much more scared when Jerry got it rather than when I got it. I was already prepared for it.
Right.
So I had it. What's weird is I didn't have, unlike the cold or flu, there was no sore throat, no stuffy nose, no sneezing, no sniffling, no headache, no body aches, no hot chills that come with a high fever like that. Usually you'll get your body jumping around between being chilled and sweating. There was none of that. All I had was the high fever and what started out being a dry cough.
Hmm.
And that dry cough stayed with me for about 2.5 weeks.
Yeah. So the time that you were in, because I think this paints such an interesting perspective, that when you were at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, when you got over to there in isolation, you didn't, I mean, you had a treadmill in there, right? You had a bike and was it a bike or a treadmill or both? I mean, you were moving around and you were okay, right? It wasn't like you were in a bed, you know, dying.
Well, I had that, the room you're talking about was the lower level of containment, and I spent 19 days there afterwards. But when I first arrived, I was put in the biocontainment unit and attached to all kinds of monitors, and that's where everyone came in the hazmat suits. And I was in a hospital bed there.
You were, okay.
In the biocontainment unit, but I wasn't that sick. Had I not been contagious, 48 hours later, I would have gone back to work. My fever had already broken. There was no medication, but I was walking. I would unhook myself from the monitors and walk around the room to the goal was to get 10,000 steps in a day, which was my norm. And I was doing that they didn't want me to do it the first few days. They wanted me to work up 1,000 additional steps each day. So I was working myself up to the 10,000 and hit the 10,000 there. And I kid in my journal that I wrote on hometownstation.com that it was funny because every 7 steps I would hit the wall.
Yeah, I saw that.
That small, so
that's...
you do the math to get to 10,000 steps.
Yeah, that's why I said, wow, because I know you had a small room. Yeah.
They put in a special air device that captured the molecules to see how the virus might travel via the air. They took many, many blood tests. And then the swab, the way they were doing the swabs for everybody back then was one would go deep down your throat for 5 seconds, and two would go up each nostril. And which and that's not a fun process, but I got bonus for the clinical study. They also added two under my eyelids, and then one went deep up my rear end. So
oh,
I took one for the team there.
Well, you're part of the 65 and older crowd, so I'm sure did they have some interest in you because of that? Because you know they say the statistics aren't good for 65 and older, and here you are not that sick.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that was part of it. And back then, you know, we were really the first set in the States to have it.
So true. Yeah.
We were the first ones they could start doing any kind of basic testing on.
Right. Interesting.
So I think, you know, I think they had a variety of things going at that time. And with the study, they're still keeping track with me, and they also want to, I'm registered now to give platelets, and they cleared me to do that, so now I'm on the list to be one of those to where they can experiment with the platelets to see if that will assist people.
Because you had the virus? Because you had the virus,
yeah.
You can give platelets. Interesting. Wow.
Because I had the virus, they want to take my blood, use that as platelets and put it into someone who's desperately ill with the hope that my blood will help because I'm now immune to it for a while. So they're hoping my blood will assist and maybe save a life.
They're learning something new every day. And speaking of being immune to it, are you the one that goes to the stores now for you and your wife because she hasn't had it and you have? Are you wearing a mask?
I haven't yet. Because when my wife came back, having never gotten it, and what's weird is not only was she exposed to all of us, but on the plane ride between Travis and Nebraska, there were three of us in the biocontainment center. Three of us in this area on the plane that was sealed off.
Mm-hmm.
They had set it up. And so I was sitting next to a woman who happened to get married on the plane. And on my ship.
Oh,
so
okay. I was like, on the plane?
Husband, yeah, and she and her husband were on their honeymoon.
Oh.
And
right.
My wife, Jerry, ended up sitting next to the husband the whole way. And as they were flying to Omaha, the husband had obviously come down with the virus because he developed a fever and was coughing the whole time.
That's sad.
And doing that while she's sitting next to him for 4 hours, and she still didn't get the virus.
Wow.
So when she came back to Santa Clarita, it was a weird situation. When we, about the second day on the Diamond Princess, we chose to go public with our story.
Yeah, I did. And I was surprised by that. That was very interesting.
Yeah, we did that because what was happening, we hesitated, and then we were seeing a lot of social media posts from a number of other passengers that were saying things about Princess that wasn't true.
Mm.
And saying that they had no water, that they didn't have food, that they had to pay for all their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And none of that was true. It was the exact opposite. There was some scrambling the first day. So, you know, meals were served later, but we always got more than we could eat. We never had to pay for anything. Princess was reimbursing everybody for the entire cruise.
Oh, wow.
And so Princess was being awesome about it. And we just wanted to start sharing what the truth was and what was really happening.
Right.
And as soon as we started doing that, people started calling us, and then more and more press started calling us, and we kind of became the epicenter, I was writing the journal on a daily basis that we were posting on hometownstation.com. And so we were getting a lot of attention because we were the first to feed out information from the inside, from, you know, the perspective of people surrounded by the virus.
And you said that there were some rumors even that were making it sound like you were in critical condition, too, that was another reason why you wanted to write, was because you were actually OK and you had concerned friends
right.
calling and thinking you weren't OK. Right.
That was later. And then we also, when people knew we were first starting to talk about flying back from Japan, that's when we started getting death threats.
Okay, well, my hope is that you're really hearing the positives in this story. And we've got a lot more positives ahead in part two, so be sure to stick around for that when that comes out. I hope that today this episode didn't scare you or make you, you know, I know some of the stuff when he's talking about claustrophobia, I'm like, that kind of scares me because I've been known to be a little claustrophobic. But, you know, I know he got through it and I've heard the other side of it. And I'm just really excited that we can bring some positivity and some truth to this this virus that is affecting all of our lives right now. So be with us for part two. That's coming up really soon. And I will talk to you then. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I hope that something in today's conversation provided you with a feeling of hope, determination, or purpose. I know what you're going through, and that's why I want to give you some of the tools that helped me in my anxiety journey. To get your free copy of Dr. Barr's Relaxation Audio that helped change my life forever, just go to lifefreeofanxiety.com/relax. Thanks again for listening, and remember, you are not broken, you are not alone, and you are on your way to living a life free of anxiety. See you next week. Before you go, I wanted to give you one last reminder to discover your anxiety profile at lifefreeofanxiety.com/profile. Going forward, we really think this should be the starting point for everyone's anxiety journey. Once you're done, you'll probably wonder how we could learn so much from just a few questions. It really is amazing. What you don't see is behind the scenes, your responses are compared to what we've learned from helping over 200,000 people just like you reverse their anxiety over the past 40 years. It's a data-backed assessment with real insights. I promise it's worth 90 seconds of your time, and it's totally free. Just click the link in the show notes or head to lifefreeofanxiety.com/profile, and I'll talk to you again soon.